It's the book everybody's talking about. Acclaimed author Clark Garrison lays it all on the line in his new book on how to survive the next 365 with real-life accounts of success and failure. And it's not only Clark Garrison's story, but it's yours as well. Order your book today at survivethenext365.com. And now, tune in bi-weekly to find out how you can discover the unique journey that you possess, along with the greatness in you. Join author Clark Garrison on Blog Talk Radio bi-weekly to help you figure out your personal blueprint on surviving the next 365. Learn the art of believing in the power within you with Clark Garrison. It's the hottest book on the planet, How to Survive the Next 365 by Clark Garrison. Order your book online now at survivethenext365.com or call 866-642-9125 and tell them to rush your order by author Clark Garrison on How to Survive the Next 365.
Bring it on. I like that bit. Check it out.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's The Conversation. I am your host, DK Garrison, coming to you live from Atlanta, GA. As always, hey, this show is based on the need to provide America with a dose of positive energy. And ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what we're going to bring to you today. First of all, thank you so much for tuning in. If you are listening via the internet and you'd like to ask any one of our guests today, or today, I should say, a question, the number to dial is 917-932-1078. Hey, be sure to hit the number one button and I will see your hand raised. Pretty simple. Chat room is open, so feel free to hang out in there. Phone lines are keeping busy. How about that? And shout out to Robert Blake for producing my intro. I want to say a big thanks to my new management team at Greenwood Management. Big shout out to Mike and Brittany. Oh, and by the way, I got married on the 11th. How about that? Wow. I know, right? Guess what? Today on the conversation, a longtime friend of mine, he's a brilliant songwriter, singer, and musician. The very popular Mr. A. London Arrington will be on top to chat it up on the conversation. But this time he's a featured guest. Also, two literary divas. Author of Real Talk, up next, Ms. D. Derek and Lisa Matthews are going to set the record straight with some Real Talk. They'll be in the studio in just a moment. Don't touch that mouse. Hey, but right now, I want you to relax and listen to the sounds of Brother A. London Arrington. This track coming up is titled, I Love You. If you didn't know, you're listening to The Conversation. We'll see you in just a moment.
Oh, one, two, three. Shoo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Yeah. You're my sunshine. You're bright and of my day. You're my moonlight. darkness when I'm gone astray. I thank God for you. He made you just for me. We will live as one, one soul eternally. Because I love you. Yes, I love you. Let me tell you how I feel about you. Listen. You're my melody with fire love songs in me. You're my healing hand. You soothe my anatomy. Now I have no real love, but never like this before.
Sheldon Sneed Designs with an S
shellsneed@yahoo.com. Or you can email him at shellsneed@yahoo.com. That's shellsneed@yahoo.com. All right. Without further ado, if I can get my staff to cooperate with me, or we will have to start firing some folks around here. Hey, we took a while to get these two young ladies on. I think they've been touring over in the Midwest, I don't know, Afghanistan, Pakistan. You know, their book is so popular. It's just all worldwide right now. But without further ado, let me bring them on. My guests are authors of the newly popular book titled Real Talk. A Real Talk is a literary documentary of eight men and their perspectives on a number of topical issues about relationships, sex, and marriage with black men, with black women, and more. Please welcome the dynamic team of Lisa Matthews and Dee Derrick in the house. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
It has been a pleasure. Before, well, let me let your applause finish. I'm sorry. Hey,
well, first,
ladies,
we want to say congratulations on your marriage. Congrats.
Oh, well, you know, thank you so much. You know, I guess I'm a newlywed.
Yes, you are. Right. You are.
Wow, that's deep. Okay, there we go. Hey, I'm happy to be married, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about marriage and the so-called belief that African American men are scared of it. So I can't wait to dive into that. But ladies, before we get going, I want to thank you so much for gracing the show with your thoughts, your energies, and I want to thank Mr. Calvin Evans, now my cousin through marriage, for introducing us and playing a key part of getting this show booked. So shouts out to Cal in the house. Are you there, ladies?
Yes,
definitely.
Yes, we are.
We're
here.
Oh, okay.
Y'all
scared me.
We are here. We are here.
Because I was like, did I just waste the intro?
No, we really greatly appreciate Calvin. We didn't know if you had an applause coming for him also, so
we just waited a little bit.
You know, we were waiting on the applause for Calvin.
There he is right there.
There we go.
There we are. Yay, Calvin. Calvin has been such an amazing part of this book and this project, so we're just very grateful for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is the bomb. Hey, ladies, how did you get together? I know one of you is an Atlantean, the other is straight out of the Bama girl in the house, and our other guest later on, he's a Bama boy. Yeah, Alabama show today. So how did you guys get together?
Well, we were working downtown in Atlanta, and we always crossed paths at our previous jobs. And when we would talk, we had great conversation about relationships, about dating, and about being single in Atlanta. So we decided that we knew so many positive black men that we really wanted to highlight that. Instead of focusing so much on the negative issues that are portrayed in the media through research studies, we wanted to talk to the brothers, actually, and that's sort of how this project came into fruition.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Stop believing what they say, and you guys went straight to the source, and you put it all in black and white. I'm so proud of you for doing that, because most people, you know, we constantly keep having these discussions, but we don't get anywhere because no one is listening. So I really want to take my hats off for you ladies being so brave and actually reaching out to the opposite sex and, you know, saying, look, keep it real. What's the real talk?
Right. We decided, like you said, we wanted to go right to the source. Why listen to what other people are saying about our community? And so we just talked to the men down the street, the guy who works, you know, who was a teacher, who was a doctor, you know, people that we just knew from growing up, et cetera. So we decided to have those conversations with them directly.
Wow. Hey, shout out to everybody listening out there, Yogi in the house. all the FAMU Rattlers. I'm sure y'all are tuning in. Big shouts out to y'all. We love you all. Listen, if you have a question you want to ask Lisa or Dee during this conversation, you're already on the line. All I need you to do is hit the number one button, and I will see your hand raised. You can talk to these ladies. If you're in the chat room, type it in, or you can dial the number 917-932-1078. Be sure to hit the number one button. I'd like to know how you came up with the idea of writing a book about what a man actually thinks, and who developed the unique format of making it a documentary kind of style versus a fictional piece to try to sell, you know, to over glamorize it. This is real documentary footage, you know, written down. So who came up with that format?
It was a collective effort. So we just wanted something that was, you know, we didn't want how to get a man or how to keep a man. We really just wanted to focus on communication, because that's the piece that we felt was lacking most in our community. We just don't communicate enough.
Mm. Well, I want to ask you ladies individually, Lisa, are you currently in a relationship, or are you married?
No, I'm single. I'm not married. I'm unmarried. And that's why we also wanted to have these conversations. We wanted to get the brothers' perspective on marriage, on dating, you know, what were their experiences. And Dee has an extensive background in psychology, and my background is in, like, education qualitative research. So that's how we came up with that type of documentary style. And that's exactly where it came from. So instead of having this how-to type book, we are not relationship experts by any means. Like I said, we're both unmarried women. And that's one thing we really stress this. This book is not about one. This is how you get a man. This is how you keep a man.
Right.
No, not at all. We wanted to give men the platform to speak freely. I mean, what better way to get to know men unless you have those conversations with them?
Exactly.
And that's one thing, when we interviewed them, they all said, wow, no one has ever asked me these types of questions before. It was very basic. These were basic questions. So it made us raise our eyebrows, like, what kind of conversations are we having while we are in relationships?
Right, exactly.
I know the answer, but I want our audience to know, are you married, or what's your status?
I am not married. I am unmarried, as Lisa stated. Yeah, I'm single as well.
Okay, well, see, there's hope for you young brothers out there. I might be upset. Okay. Now, here's my question, ladies. By what way were these particular men vetted? Were they just people you knew, you felt like they would be honest, or were you looking for a class, you know, you wanted people who worked in different fields? How did you come up with these eight guys?
We just chose guys that we knew, would get honest feedback, real feedback, that would, you know, be open with us, and, you know, that guys that were really just open to the idea of, you know, sitting down and talking with us and really just being real, like, honestly, and not, you know, not sugarcoating anything because we were females, like, guys that we knew had great conversation, and guys that we knew, you know, they were going to give us real feedback.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the most important piece.
Yeah, we didn't want anybody coming in thinking that they had to sugarcoat anything, or that they, you know, that they were going to hold back. And even the times where, you know, if we ever felt like they were holding back, we were like, okay, hold up. Nah, let's come again. Let's, you know, we wanted it raw. So that was really kind of how we went, the direction we went with it.
I want to ask Lisa this, and I'm asking you to be right after this, but you may have found it to be the same thing, but perhaps not. What's the number one thing you found out that shocked you the most, that you may have, you didn't know about men and what they found about women?
Well, one thing that really contradicted the research that has been conducted on black men was that they really do. They want to get married. They want to have family. So often we focus on this negative view that black men don't want to get married. You hear these statistics about how many marriages are not happening between us and our communities. But that was definitely one that kind of surprised us. And then actually a national study was just conducted recently, and they found that 87% of black men look forward to marrying black women, single black men. So that really helped to sustain what we found in our research as well.
Right, definitely.
Wow, 87%?
87%
yeah.
of brothers who are single oh. said they look forward to marrying a black woman. Yes.
Now, that's real
mm-hmm.
talk. What about you,
real
Z? Did you find something different that maybe shocked you as you're compiling this data or asking these guys these questions?
No, it was pretty much the same thing, just to know that, you know, the black men are, you know, they do want families. They want, you know, they want love. They want to be married, like Lisa stated. So that was really the main thing. A lot of, you know, as she said earlier, a lot of times we don't hear that. That's not what's, you know, shown in the media. So we often assume that, you know, that's not what guys want, that they don't want to have families and they don't want to be married. But it was really the exact opposite.
And there was one more. There was one more big aha. There's this type of misconception that black men are intimidated by successful women.
Yeah,
that is not true. They are actually
right.
proud of a woman's success. They are not
yeah.
intimidated by that. They have an issue with a black woman or a woman in general who looks down on them because of their success.
Exactly.
Or who holds that over their head. I'm this independent. I'm this and that. I don't need you. They are proud of our successes. As females
right.
out here. So that was another one.
It's just knowing, you know,
a,
just really knowing how to balance it all.
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite
this
quotes from the book was, yeah, one of our favorite quotes was the participant said, I'm proud of your success. I'm glad you're successful, but leave your success at work because at home we have a different business to run.
Yeah.
Yes. This is why I'm so happy you ladies wrote this book because, and we really all need to run out right now and get this book, and we're going to dive into how to exactly do that. But ladies, I got some basic questions I want to ask that, you know, always bantered about. You just answered one, which is the whole myth that, you know, all black men are so scared of a strong, independent black woman that they're running scared and they don't, you know, what are we going to do? So I'm glad you touched on that. But what about, do you find that men are not or are they afraid of commitment?
Well, Dee, you could chime in too. We didn't find that. And from other men we know, they're not afraid of commitment. They're afraid. It was something that we read that sort of says it all, like men are afraid that the woman may change once they commit to them or they get
right.
into a marriage.
Right.
So oftentimes we find that women want their men to change when they commit to them, but men, they want the woman to stay the same before, you know.
Right, yeah.
I think that
is true. I think it's more so that it's, you know, they don't want the nagging that comes, you know, 6 months down the road or the, you know, even to get on, you know, sex. They want that, you know, they want that to remain the same. You know, just I think it's more so those things. I don't really think it's the commitment piece, not from, you know, from talking with the guys. I don't think so.
And as a follow-up to that, you know, we've had several movies out there in the black community that really emphasize that black men are intimidated by women who may make more than they do. Have you found
mm-hmm.
that to be a truism?
No. Not at all.
No. It's just that
they're
woman.
Proud.
Right, it's that woman that can't, you know, for those women that can't balance it, that they like, you know, first thing, you know, they go on a date and the first thing that they're talking about is what they do or what they make or, you know, it's those women that they don't want to be involved with, you know what I mean? It's just about finding that balance. Like, it's okay to be successful and they're fine with that. Like, every guy mentioned that. Like, every guy that we talked to, even now when we're just, you know, when we talk to different guys that we didn't interview on the book, you know, when we just, you know, just different male figure or men, I'm sorry, that we come in contact with now, even when we have those same conversations, it's not, you know, the woman that's, you know, it's those women that's all they think about, talk about. It's the ones that can't find the balance.
Wow.
And they did say that they're tired of having to prove themselves also.
Yeah.
Just in general, they're tired of that.
So, ladies, you know, here we are. I'm a little miffed. We have all of these misnomers that are out there, and you guys went out, did research, incredible research, I might add, and you found almost to a issue that the case is not so. So I guess my question is, based on this newfound information you have, where is all this misinformation coming from?
The media.
I think the media. And the one thing is, we're not the ones conducting our research. You know, no one can tell your story better than you can. And even though this study was small, we had a very small pool sample size participants. However, it's a beginning, and we're going to continue this work. We want to do a Real Talk series. This is only the beginning, and we are proud of this start to do and conduct research on our own in our community and to get our voice heard. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait. I hope you have a TV show, radio show, whatever you have, we're definitely going to follow you, because this is the information, honestly, that we got to get out to our community, because you're right. You hit the nail on the head. We aren't the ones that are putting this information out. We aren't the ones that are going out and doing the polls and sitting out and having real talk conversations with each other and allowing those voices to be heard so that we can wake up, you know, stop saying all black men are in prison.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's what we're so excited about it.
Yeah, and it's you know, whatever the media puts out there, if that's what you see, that's what you believe, unless you go out and do what we did. You know, that's why we really wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny how when people first see the cover of the book or they hear the title, they think it's a male bashing book. We always have to do that. We have to really let the men know it's not a male bashing book.
It's
and
not
as soon
at
as
all.
They read it, they're so happy. They're like, wow, this book is really interesting.
Right, guys that have emailed us back, like, you know, a full page, like, man, I love this part, I love this, or, you know, just, they, you know.
I could relate to this character.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, we have more guys, if anything, that actually, you know, that read it, email us back, you know, or just have different ideas, or can you do this type of book next, you know what I mean? So the guys are really, really excited about it. So that shows that. That, you know, that they're happy about it, you know, and that, you know, they do want families, and they want those things, the positive things, you know, out there as well, not just the negative things.
Right, and it's funny, at the beginning, Dee and I, we were really soliciting participants, men to interview, and it was so hard for us. We wanted to do, like, 20 men, but we ended up with 8, which we're very happy and grateful for those who participated. But now, it's funny, people are really contacting us. To be
like,
in the
I
next
want to be
series.
In the next one, yeah.
But it was hard for us to find people to interview at first.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, put me down for the one when you do one about married men. So,
married,
you know,
couples,
I'm in for that one.
Yes.
So definitely.
I got to ask you this, ladies. I'd be remiss if I didn't, since this is a topic in our community. First of all, were any of the 8 men, did you ask this question, whether they were willing or had in the past or are currently dating outside their race?
You know we had to ask that question.
We did. We did. Some of the men were, it was kind of like half and half. There were some that, you know, that were strictly, you know, no, I want to date a black woman. And then we had some that were equal opportunists. So
equal opportunists, and some who said, I think it's ignorant not to date someone just because of their skin color. So we had that was a very divided type question there.
I can imagine, especially in 2011 and what we've got going on in our nation. Yeah, it's kind of hard to keep those borders up and, like you said, but you know what? I saw a special, and this could be or could not be it. So here's the thought on that. Do you find that more black women are starting to date outside their race?
I think they are.
They definitely are.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, some of the studies are revealing that.
Because, you know, what we see is that, you know, black men that they, you know, that, like you said, they're in prison or, you know, they're gay. Or, you know, we hear all the negative aspects of black men, and we don't really see enough of the positive. And I think that's why, you know, some women are seeking outside races.
But there was one very unfortunate statistic that it seems to be true or hold a lot of value, that most of our men were raised in single-parent homes. And that was even with our participants, the majority were. And they just talked about how that played into how they view relationships. And most of them, they wanted, that's why they wanted the marriage. They wanted the wife and the children and to do it in that manner because they grew up in single-parent homes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm glad you said that because that was my next question. I want to throw this in. So do you believe, your opinion, both of your opinions, that fatherless homes is a primary cause of all the confusion with relationships down the line, both from a male point of view and the female point of view?
Definitely. Definitely so, because I think that you don't have, you know, we don't have defined roles anymore. So, you know, for a guy, for instance, that's raising a single-parent home, he knows how to treat his mother, but not necessarily. He hasn't seen how to treat, you know, he hasn't seen his father treat his mom, you know what I mean? So he doesn't really know. And the same thing for a woman, you know, we're, you know, I was raised in a single-parent family, you know, for the most part of my life. So I think even for women, I think if we, you know, we have that same issue. Like, we're, you know, we see, like, such a strong, you know, so many strong women in our lives. And then, you know, when you become an adult, you realize that you have to find that balance. Like, even though you didn't see it, and, you know, some people continue to use it as an excuse, but you can. At some point, you have to, you know, have to be accountable for, you know, yourself and as an adult and, you know, make those decisions to, okay, you know, now I need to figure out how to make this work between a man, you know, a man and a woman. How do I love my man as a man? Not, you know what I mean, not as a father figure, not looking for that. You just, you have to find that balance. And I think that's key for this whole thing. You have to find that balance.
Well, ladies, you have definitely stirred up the bee's nest with your book, Real Talk. And I got to ask you this, we're at the close of our segment. Man, time flies, ladies. We got to have you back. I'm sorry.
Thank you. We would love to.
We have to talk to your booking agent and get this thing done. But what's up for you next? I know you talked about taking it to another level of another platform. So what you got in the hopper?
Well, we have really been discussing interviewing married couples next. So that's one. And that's some of the suggestions that our readers have let us know about. Any others?
No, that's about it. I mean, we've been, like you said earlier, we've been, you know, doing some of the book tours and seminars. We actually just did a seminar in Virginia on Friday.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was Friday night.
We had a blast.
It was great. So, we had a really good, you know, turnout. Really, you know, very interactive crowd. You know, it was really nice. So we're
going to get you back in the ATL to set it off here.
Yes, we do.
Hey, whenever we're always looking, you know, to promote however we can, and just really, we really just love to have those conversations. I mean, it's been great. This whole journey has been really, really great. But just really having those conversations and just hearing the dialogue between, you know, black men and black women and just focusing on some of those key things that we hear so much, some of those negative things, and just trying to shed a positive light on it all, that's been the greatest piece of all of this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Just highlighting the voices of black men, because so oftentimes they're silenced. They're silenced by media. They're silenced by women, let's be honest. So to give them that voice and that platform to speak, that has been very rewarding for us.
Right. It really has.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you ladies for being harbingers of the truth. I like it real talk.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for sharing Real Talk with us today and for having the courage to write this book, ladies. Where can our guests, our listeners right now, I know they're frothing at the mouth with the title of us talking about it. They want to get a copy. How can they get a copy of this book right now?
Go to www.realtalklive.com. Again, that's www.realtalklive.com.
Yes, ma'am. We got that in the chat room as well, www.realtalklive.com. Get your book right now. And
if you're in the D.C. area, you can get our book at Howard University. That's where I'm placed also.
Howard. Don't get me started with them HBCUs. Don't get me started, ladies.
Thank you so much.
Hey, y'all promise to come back. Can we get you back
we
on the show
promise.
Soon?
We promise. Definitely, yes.
All right,
this
I will
so
be tracking you down to get this done.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we had a ball. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. Lisa Matthews, D. Derek in the house, authors of Real Talk. You got to get this book. It's pretty simple. Just right now, well, not right now because you're listening to the show, but after the show, www.realtalklive.com. If you're at Howard University and you're listening to the show, hey, go get it. Right now, well, after the show. Hey, listen, don't go anywhere. Don't touch the mouse. Don't touch the dial. You know who's up. Abe London is in the house, so I need not say any more. But before we go to this brother, we're going to hear one of his other cuts. The title of this cut is Dear God. Yes, he is spiritual. I almost said religious. He was going to go off. He's spiritual. Listen to this cut titled Dear God. When we come back, we got A. London in the house. Real talk. That's what's up. We are back. That was A. London Arrington in the house. We got this brother coming up next. So let me just give him a little intro. My next guest, I've had the pleasure of knowing for the past 25 odd years. Actually, it's been more, but that I wanted to round it off. He's a singer, songwriter, musician, to name just a few things. His music covers the entire gambit of musical genre from country, jazz, R&B to rock. Please welcome to the show, without further ado, Mr. A. London Arrington in the building. Welcome, Brother Arrington.
Hey, what's up, bro? I like that applause effect.
Yeah. Standing room only, man.
So what?
They think it's Steve's in here tonight.
Okay. All right. But first of all, I want to say, man, thanks for having me. I definitely love, checking out the show. I've seen the growth, and I like how you always want to have a positive perspective on some things, whatever. And so I'm glad to be here, bro.
Man, I appreciate that, man. I know you just got off the red eye or whatever eye you've been all over the world, so I just appreciate you having a little time, man. Are you tired, brother?
Man, yeah, but it's all good, though. You know what I'm saying? I would say the last 36 hours, I may have had like 2 hours of sleep. But it's that grind, man, because when you love what you do, you do what you love on a regular basis, so. It's all good. I just got back from D.C. and Philly. And sometimes when you're an independent artist, I know we're going to, segue into some of that stuff, but sometimes when you're an independent artist, you just have to get it in how you have to get it in. And it just worked out where I left my house yesterday at, like 5, be it Hartsville, and I got back in at Hartsville. I think I called you at, 12:31.
Yeah.
And I may have laid it down between 2:30 or 4:30, because anybody that knows DC, I was downtown DC on F and 7, and then to catch an early flight, you got to be able to shuttle for 2 hours. You know what I'm saying? Just to catch that first flight coming out of the Baltimore airport. So it is what it is, man. And I mean, I'm grateful for the grind. I'm grateful to be able to wake up every day and do what I'm passionate about. So my passions have evolved over the years, because back in the day, all I ever wanted to do was to be a big time musician, singing star, whatever. Until I started looking at them contracts.
Hey, London, I remember I'm listening to you, brother, and I know you've been overseas. You've been in China, Japan, Europe, wherever. You've been all over. But I'm hearing you, brother's like, I got in a little red eye, here and there. I remember when we just walked down the spur and that was a treat.
No, let me tell you, it was a treat. No, look, since you said before this interview came on, we was going to keep wandering. Here was a treat. Hey, you remember when you got that new Camaro? Not the first Camaro, not the raggedy Camaro, the new one, the brand new one. And we used to ride Orange Avenue singing Miles J.
Oh my God, Miles! Damn, that thing went back in,
that?
Bro. Not the right.
That was the
new Camaro. You can tell me shit then.
Right. The new Camaro. You used to say, "Baby, come on." I'm telling you, man. You might want to keep the format of this interview before we end up acting a fool on air, because people don't know we've known each other since we were teenagers, and we are definitely not teenagers anymore. But
we're going to switch in and out, bro. We're going to switch in and out. We're going to give them something, and then we're going to act up a little bit. But let's go back to where it began, sir, the great state of Alabama. By the way, one of the young ladies just on, that was your homegirl, so this Alabama show today. Brother London, at what age, man, did you realize you had a voice that was more than the normal Joe?
Honestly, bro, I really didn't get into singing. I sang a little bit in a church choir, and but it wasn't really something that I really embraced because I played trombone. And early on, I thought like every other kid that I wanted to be a professional football player or whatever. You know, it never dawned on me about singing or whatever. I was kind of, to be honest with you, I was kind of nerdy in school. So, you know, I made good grades. Like every other kid, I kind of compromised the intellect just to try to fit in. But I realized that I could sing at around 17 or 18. You know, at FAM, we got freshman brothers. To be honest with you, I just had the privilege of my roommate at FAM was and still is considered a musical genius in the jazz round, and his name is Wycliffe Gordon. And we were up on the fourth floor, so anybody that's went to FAM or Marsh and the 100 that's listening understands like how much time is spent on the fourth floor doing various things. You know, we actually happened to be studying and going over music that particular night in one of the practice rooms. And Cone, that's what we call Wycliffe, Cone was writing a song. And, you know, back then he was just like, man, I can't really sing. You know, I heard you hum a little bit. Can you put some words to this and sing this song for me? And I did. And a lot of people don't know that Cliff can play piano as well as he can play trombone. Actually, he can play about 20 instruments, but that's a whole other story. But I sang the song for him, and then he was like, bro, you know, you can really sing. And I knew when I met Cliff that he was a genius, you know what I'm saying, because I was supposed to be the best trombone player from, you know how we did in 100. I was supposed to be the best trombone player from Alabama. He was supposed to be the best trombone player from Georgia. And then when I heard him play the stuff that he was playing, I was like, nah, dude, I'm really not going to try to compete with you at all. I mean, you got me with this bone thing. So I need to – that's what made me start studying singing, man. Being roommates with him playing trombone, I almost had a complex, you know what I'm saying, about my gift on bone. So I started singing. But that's when I really realized, to answer your question, we were on the fourth floor, man, and he was like, bro, I think you can really sing. And I was saying to myself, no, for real, bro, you know, as well as you can play, you think I can sing? And then from that point on, you know, I started singing, and I started teaching myself how to play the piano. Man, do you remember, we segueing, but do you remember there was recital hall in the band room across from the band room where the choir used to practice?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, Cliff taught me how to play. He showed me this exercise. But you were actually the first person who taught me a song on, because you used to play, you used to fiddle around with the piano all the time. And since you've been gone, on my CD, has the same chord progressions as used to play, I think it was Making Love in the Rain by Janet Jackson. You remember how you learned the chord progressions of that? Remember that? And then from that, you played the chord progressions, and I sung a song called My Lady. You remember that?
Yeah.
And then
you went back then.
So actually, the two people that taught me how to play keys was Wycliffe and you. And so I just stuck with what you all learned. I never took lessons. But those two things, those two chord progressions and something that Cliff showed me, all my songs are written based off of what you showed me in the recital hall and working with Cliff on the fourth floor when we were teenagers.
Wow. Man, you went back to circa 84, 85 then. Hey, if you're tuning in, you're going to have a treat, I guarantee you. You're listening to A. London Arrington. If you have a question, concern, or if you just want to chat it up with Brother Arrington, the number to dial is 917-932-1078. Hit the number one button, and I'll see your hand raised. Hey, I'm trying to keep it, you know, kosher, but I keep wanting to say, you know, Bert, but damn, I can't do that.
No, you can call me whatever you want, because the people from FAM that's calling in going to call me Al, because they refuse to call me A. London Arrington. So, you know, it's all good with me. I'm still the same dude, Albert London Arrington. I never got brand new. So I know, look, when you go to the lines, if somebody from FAM, they're going to be like, Al London. You know, so you can just go ahead and just keep it 100. you know, all keep right, it 100. Just call me Alec or call me Bert. So that's fine. I'm cool with that.
All right. That's what's up. Hey, you attended, obviously we talked to you, attended FAMU and was part of the Marching 100, man. Hey, you were a mainstay at talent shows around campus. You know, that's how I got most of my plays, just hanging around you. We won't even go there. Oh, Jesus. I appreciate that, bro. You know, you was, oh, anyway. Hey, what did FAMU teach you musically, man? How did you, and how did that affect who you would become as a performer and songwriter now?
I would say the biggest impression that it had on me musically is to I don't want to see how I can put this. Musically, I think in anything, but I learned in music that you have to have a competitive spirit, that you have to people see perfection, but there's a preparation that comes with perfection, and if you prepare very, very well, perfection comes across really easily, almost seamlessly. And I think I learned that from Doc Foster, man. A lot of people weren't ever in the band room when we had to play one note over and over and over again, and then we would play one measure. For those people who don't know, you know, a measure really only has like 1, 2, 3, 4 beats in it, you know, but Doc would dissect it and make it. So you had to play on what he called free tones, and you had to play one measure perfectly before you can move to the next. So that level, man, of just understanding fundamentals and the mathematics of music would give you an opportunity to expound on the formula or the mathematics of music, because music really is mathematic. And let's go back. I mean, so we're talking about the full circle of what I learned at FAM. So you got dudes like Wycliffe. You got dudes like Richard Beckford. You got dudes like that came after us, Jermaine Fleming. You got dudes like Scotty Barnhart, professor of jazz musician. So people don't know Morgan Harris, who left before I got there, but he would come back from time to time. These guys are not really well known in pop culture and society, but as far as FAM and the music and of that era. That's who we kind of iron sharpen iron with. And so I can remember clearly, and I know you're going to remember this too when I say it, somebody would write the ballad for our halftime performance. And then Cliff would turn around and say, okay, look, Sweet Love is in E flat. Remember how we used to do that?
Oh, yeah.
And he would say, as long as you're playing in the key of E flat, you can play, and I hope Doc's not listening because he would probably be pissed, but as long as you're playing in the key of E-flat, once we don't play our solo part, you can play whatever you want and improvise as long as you're playing in the key of E-flat. So as teenagers, even within the 100, the trombone section was improvising on our parts. You know what I'm saying? So as far as the musical lesson that I learned, crazy. My musical lesson at 18, 17, 18, 19 was learn the mathematics of music, learn the theory of music, and that will allow you to be able to improvise within that format or that equation of music. I named some people who helped me out musically, and then some people who helped me out as far as just life, period. My first day a pre-drill, I met Pierre. And back then, a lot of people called him Selwyn Scott, but now he's just Pierre. That's his name, you know.
Yeah,
and,
one name.
That was one name. There were so many other things that I learned from him. You know, we call Vic now because he's a grown man, but back then we called him, that's your cousin, we called him Gizmo. So life lessons too, man, lessons a brotherhood. So fam taught me so many things from a musical standpoint, but just from a brotherhood and a life standpoint, I learned a lot as well. You got my homeboy Vamp, Big Grizz was the first entrepreneur that I saw who was the same age as I was. You know what I'm saying? So just a wealth of information.
I agree on that one 100%.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, fam, the 100, man, that music program, you know, just actually taught me a lot. Taught me about understanding business and what's what. Because a lot of times we would get gigs or Sarge would get us gigs. And, I mean, hey, like I said, I'm going to keep it real. You know, if you ain't watch your money got ghosts, you know, because Sarge from the old school. So if you don't understand the business, the music business, your paycheck will come up short. If you don't understand your worth. So we learn early, you know, be about the business of business when you're in the music business. And that's one of the reasons why I never signed, because I understood what pimping felt like in college.
Man, I'm glad you said that, because that rolls into this question, man. You're an independent artist. Have you obviously, by the answer of that, by giving that answer, you sought out at some point in time, at least, what's the deal with, you know, a recording contract. What was your experiences with that, man? You know, I know, but I want you to tell kind of our listeners what you were dealing with, because you were kind of old school when it comes to when you were first coming out.
Yeah, I was. I learned very early that there were a lot of people, a lot of household names who, and I mean, I use, you know, slang and symbolisms and, you know, metaphors, whatever, but, I'll definitely try to just be straight laced with the answers, but I got to say it this way, because this is what it looked like to me. At an early age, I pursued a record contract, and there were some people who were interested in me, because at the time, you had a lot of people like Brian McKnight, my homeboy Joe, who's from Opelika, Alabama, Duke Garfield, what was it, that group that had the acapella joint, And If I Ever Fall in Love, whatever the name of that group was, the light-skinned dude with the curly hair, Garfield, is from my hometown, Montgomery. He said he was from somewhere else, but I went to junior high with him, so I know where he went, where he was. But all these guys signed these horrific deals, man. I mean horrific, where the label signed them for like 7 years and got somewhere between 75 to 80% of everything that they did. They owned 75 to 80% on some deals, 90% of their publishing. So I guess in layman's terms, that means case in point. Let's say you're an artist, bro, and you do a CD, okay? As soon as you sign with me, I own somewhere between 75 to 90% of your music for life. Or if you get lucky, maybe 15 or 20 years down the line, you can buy back the ownership of your own music. So that means whenever it's played on the radio, whenever someone buys it, just by chance if it gets picked up on a commercial, if someone plays on a TV show, in a movie, the label owns 75 to 90% of that music for whatever, however many years they want it. And then every time you do a deal after that, it's the same deal. So a lot of you all are wondering why some of these people are coming forward on VH1, Behind the Music, or the new thing they have now, and a lot of people end up broke. They end up broke because some of them just signed horrific deals where the label owned 75 to 90% of their music, and they really only got paid back then if you went on tour and did a show. That's the only money the label would allow you to have. But when you think about how many other things go into you going on tour, you're the last person to get paid. So you're the last person to get paid from the deal, you're the last person to get paid from a tour, and then you that comes back around full circle, because if you owe them money, which most artists owe the label money after their first deal. The label will in turn give you another advance that puts you more in the hole, and they still own the same percentage of that deal. So it's just a, it's once you sign a bad deal, it's just a downward spiral. Because let's say you sign a 7-year deal, and you have to put out a product every year of that 7 years. So you multiply everything that I just said times 7, and by the time that deal is over, whatever you owe them times 7, plus any expenses that you may accrue above and beyond what they paid you, what you used to go out on tour. Then you take into effect that you have your manager, your lawyer, your accountant, your musicians, the promoters. I mean, it's a recipe, bro, for just for bankruptcy. And go ahead.
I want to sneak in a question. We got brother Michael McFadden. Bro, I know you got a question because you talk to music people all the time. How you doing, brother Mike?
What's happening, KG?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's how you do it.
Hey,
I know you got a question for brother London. What you want to talk to him about?
It was more of a comment from Mr. London. I was listening to the show, and he's dropping some great knowledge. And like you say, man, I talk to recording artists all the time. And the sad part about it, Clark, is that even when you look at some of the old-school artists out there, Curtis Mayfield, Frankie Beverly and Maze, the Ohio Players, artists like that that are making noise today, that stuff still sells, when you think about their contracts that they had back in the day, that was for record sales or album sales. We remember those 12-inch albums that you played on the record players back in the day. Those things didn't even account for digital downloads and things like that. So at the end of the day, you're talking about the record labels owning everything, and those brothers not even getting a percentage of those types of sales nowadays. I tell you what, I am so thankful to be independent that you just don't know. That was my comment. Great show as always, sir.
Appreciate it, Real Talk. Well, we got a bunch of Real Talk. We got Real Talk, the authors, and we got Real Talk, the radio show host. Hey, yes, sir. Hey, appreciate you, brother.
Yes, sir.
Hey, what do you... Hey, Bert, you know what? Check this out. We're gonna delineate just a little bit because I want to get you back on with these two, what I call literary divas. I know you had some comments you wanted to talk to them about, and I got them all right over for you.
Okay.
But this is what we're going to do. We're going to go and listen to your third song, man. It's called The Interview. Let me just say, brother, you know, I've heard your music, bro, since you said we was riding around singing Miles J. Y'all don't even know the hell that is in the Camaro. Loud as hell. Hey, this song, The Interview, is off the chain, man. I love it. Can you do us a little lead in? Tell us a little bit about it before we play it.
Yeah, it's the new joint, man. It's coming out in January. It's the lead single from an EP called Intimate. And it's called Intimate because I'm going back to love music, man. It's enough sex songs being called love songs. It's one of those songs that talks about love, and if you feel like it's a jump off, then let it be a jump off. But I am talking about how I'm doing this and how the neighbors and this and the bed board. I'm not even approaching it like that. I'm approaching it. I'm going back to when Lionel Richie was singing Truly and before Brian McKnight became Mr. Sexual. You know what I'm saying? I'm singing love songs, but this song is actually called The Interview because if you listen to it, it's a series of questions that I'm asking a young lady, and I'm considering her to be a candidate for my soulmate. And like I said, I'm going to drop it in 2012, and that's going to be the lead single for my EP called Intimate.
That's what's up. Hey, we're going to listen to it right now. D and Lisa, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this song. Chill out.
I want you to understand that I would never ask you to do anything for me that I wouldn't do for you. This song is called The Interview. Listen. Would you pray with me every night? Would you dance with me naked by candlelight? Would you hold me tight?
Yes, sir. We are back. Hey, Bert. I just got to make a love to my wife on that one. My bad, man. I had to cut it short.
Hey, congratulations, man, on the nuptials. You know what I'm saying?
I appreciate that, sir.
Yeah.
Man, I know you like, damn, about time, huh?
Nah, I'm just saying it all happens in God's time. That's all I was saying.
When we gonna get you married, Brother Arrington?
Bruh, when I can find one and have one for more than 90 days, I'm good, because I've been a strong advocate of that layaway love. So in the past, for me, 90 days has been the same as forever. You know, I've changed since we were younger and on the yard doing what we did. But, honestly, I'm looking. But it took me a while to learn how to love myself. Before I could allow somebody else to love me and then love somebody else's daughter. So I had to work out some issues, some baggage that I was carrying from some of the same things that those sisters were talking about before I came online. So, I can identify with a lot that they were saying. That's why I asked you. I was like, man, I definitely take a part of my segment to go back and as a brother, talk about, some of the things that they were talking about, because that's, some of the things that I spend in the community, because like you said, in addition to being a musician and a singer, I spend a lot of time in the community working with young kids, and that's a passion of mine as well. And so I just enjoyed some of the things that they were saying, and some of the things struck in the chord with me. And then, in all honesty, ladies, if you're listening to me, some of the things struck in the chord, and then some of the things I was like, okay, they dealt with a multitude of topics, but I'm not saying y'all didn't keep it real, because you did. It was real talk. But there's a lot of other things, too, coming from a male perspective. When women aren't around, that dudes talk about, and a lot of dudes say, even though I'm a dude, I'm a man hater, because I'm so hard on dudes. But I'm hard on them because I know what trifling looks like, because I was trifling for so long. You know what I'm saying? And I just find that my evolution. Go ahead.
Hey, Bert, let's bring them on, man. Let's bring on. We got back by popular demand. I appreciate you ladies for calling in. We're going way off the foundation, but I love it. I love a real talk and the conversation. Welcome back, Lisa and Dee in the house with Brother A.L. This is about to be interesting.
Yeah, we're back.
Okay.
We are back.
Hey, what's up, Lisa?
And,
what's up, Dee?
Hey. Alabama in the house, by the way.
Hey, I'm from Montgomery.
How are you?
So who's, I'm good. I'm from Montgomery. Where is the Alabama person from?
I'm from Huntsville.
Okay. Okay.
This is Dee speaking,
doing?
By the way. Good. How are
okay,
you?
Okay. I'm good.
So, you were making a comment. I want you to pose that in the question so we can have some dialogue here on the conversation.
Okay. One of the things that you talked about, and one of the things that I talk about when I speak because I speak with kids from as early as 8 to as old as young adults, 21. And I mostly talk to brothers. And some of the things that you were saying are absolutely true. So I guess to preface my question, when I was around 19, I dated a young lady at FAM. And it's not explicit, it's just kind of intimate, because it's something that turned my life around. And at 19, we were living together, and we were watching TV one night or whatever, and I was playing in her hair. And in her mind, it was like a prelude to some other things to jump off. And I thought I did it all the time. But the conversation ended up being that for me, as far as she was concerned, affection and intimacy oftentimes was really only a prelude to sex, that young black men really didn't understand the concept of just intimacy and being affectionate, because 9 times out of 10, it led to something else. And like some brothers out there may say, nah, that's not true or whatever, but I'm not speaking for most people. I mean, I'm not speaking for all men. I'm just speaking for most men that I hung around with and myself, because what she taught me that has been a valuable lesson is that it's true. A lot of guys, a lot of men, black or white, really don't understand how important affection or intimacy is and why it doesn't always have to be a prelude to sex. And in our conversation, she brought it full circle. One of the sisters said that one of the reasons why dudes aren't commitment-oriented or whatever is because they didn't see a man in a household do certain things to their mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a young lady told me at 19. She was like, Bert, I understand why. You know, she said, it doesn't make it right. I'm not giving you a pass on it. But when I go home and when I hang out with you, she was like, when did you ever see your stepdad or whatever show affection or be intimate with your mom? And I had to think about it. I was like, you know what? Never. And she was like, well, did you ever see it? Did you ever see like a black couple like that? And I was like, well, yeah. And then she asked me, she was like, well, when? And I was ashamed to say, Bill Cosby and Felicia Rashad on TV. You know what I'm saying? That
right.
was my template. that was my template.
Yeah.
For, I hate the term black love. I think love has no color. You know what I'm saying? But if you got to say black love, my first benchmark, a blueprint of affection and intimacy between two black people, when I was in college, 19, and it was on TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I read you a quote from my book from one of our participants? He says, growing up without a father was difficult because we basically had to go out and learn from other men or our own experiences in life. This made it somewhat difficult because young men are always looking for guidance and help in understanding the principles and roles of a man. So as far as any other father figures, I never had any male mentors in my life. And even sometimes his uncle, and even that wasn't consistent. So, like you said, what images do we have? We have the media. Everyone talks about the Huxtables because that is the icon of a very positive, loving black family. But what about other images? We need those. And so that's why I was very grateful for the Obamas, because that was another real-life image of a very cohesive type of family structure. Mm-hmm. And that's
right.
But that's really like, who else can we look towards or focus on when we're talking about the black family, or how to love a woman or how to love a man, when we don't grow up in homes anymore with that structure?
Right. And I agree wholeheartedly, because I was one of those guys. I mean, but I'm very forthright about who I was and who I am. And I'll tell anybody, like, I was notorious on the yard for wilding out and being a womanizer. But a lot of it, too, and this is one of the things I wanted to ask the ladies about. And, I mean, Clark, you can, you know, interject any time, whatever, but I have...
Amazing, Al, you forgot that.
Say what now?
Oh, and
what'd
Asian.
You
were notorious.
Oh, man, go ahead. That's another conversation. So, anyway... Now, he just threw me off right there, because he was a hazer too, but he never liked to admit that in public, because he's a public figure now. But anyway, I have a poem called poetry series is going to be a book called She. And you know, a lot of guys say that I bash men because I never talk about the positive aspect of men, but that's really not true. I think for me, I was a womanizer, and I did it with so much zeal and zest, and I've owned that, you know what I'm saying, and taken responsibility for that. So now what I do is the same energy that I put into manipulating sisters, I put that same energy into celebrating them. But here's something that my grandmother told me a long time ago that I'm sure very few brothers acknowledge, and I acknowledge it because I realize how much detriment and pain I caused in the past. But I think a lot of brothers, it's easy to 50-50, a lot of brothers realize that sisters don't realize the very essence of God within them. I think a lot of men are able to manipulate women because men and women are taught to look for God in men. But very few men or women are taught to look for God in women. You understand what I'm saying? And so as a result, you grow up, women grow up looking for so many different things inside of a man, and men don't look for the same thing in women. But I was raised by women, so I know that there's a godliness in women that you can't deny. And my grandmother told me when I was very young, she said, baby, a lot of women don't know they have God in them. So you can, and especially if they don't have a man in their life to validate their womanhood, they can be led astray very easily.
Right.
And it was a very, what she told me was very strong. I didn't really realize it until I got older. But once I realized it, I used it for a long time to manipulate. But what I'm seeing now is, go ahead, bro.
No. Before you get off of that, I want to ask Lisa and Dee about that. Do you see that with? I mean, obviously, if we ask the question now, you know, everyone says, yeah, of course. But is that something that women think about?
To look for the godliness in a man. Is that something that women? I'm not sure I'm understanding the question. Is that something that women look for? Is that what you're saying?
No,
is it in themselves?
Have you found that a lot of times women are so easily like led astray or manipulated?
Oh yeah.
Because they look for God in a man.
We don't know our own. Exactly. Because if you don't know your own worth, then of course, then you know you're not focusing on what it truly should be. I mean, because you don't even know your worth. And I think, like you said, what you said when you first started talking, when you said you had to figure out how to love yourself first, that's
right.
The initial piece. And if you don't have that piece, you can't love another person. You don't even know how. If you can't love yourself enough to know when it's time to let go or when it's time to, you know, to move on or to look out for you, then you can't love somebody else. Like, that's, to me, that's not a characteristic of love when you don't know your worth. So, yeah, we're led astray up quite often. And which goes back to, you know, not being raised in two-parent households. I mean, you know, a lot of women have not seen, again, back to what you were just saying and what we were saying earlier, you know, a lot of women haven't seen a father figure to show them or to help guide them or for them to understand what it feels like or what it should feel like, the love from a man or, you know, from a spouse or, you know, just that affection, everything that you were just talking about earlier. So, yeah, I definitely agree.
I want to take just a moment. We got a question calling in from 904 area code. Is this Brother Barnum on the line?
Hey, yes, it is. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Casey. Go right ahead,
hey.
Man. Did you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, I had a comment and a question, I guess. Well, once again, congratulations on you and the boss's marriage on Friday. Congratulations on that. But
appreciate it, brother.
No problem. But much props to Mr. Burton as well as to the ladies. I hear the common theme is that you have to once again understand self. And too often we, in general, the black community, we have no knowledge of self. And in reference to God and trying to find God within each other and within a woman or a man, of course, let us make man in our likeness. We got to understand that we are gods. And rather than vicariously living outside ourselves to look for another image of God, which is not us, but we are gods. But in case of Mr. Burt, he said that you are a womanizer back in the day. But imagine, how do you balance the fact that essentially we in Western civilization, we are man whores or whatever when it comes to material things, possessions, whether it be clothes, cars, houses, and such. But then when it comes to a woman, we will actually ignore or basically subdue our urges to have more than one. But when in nature, an animal or such, in their true nature, they will have multiple women, female counterparts. But in Western civilization. We actually contradict that nature in ourselves of being gods and only subdued to one woman.
Well, you really answered your own question, bro. Because what you basically said was animals in creation in the kingdom. You know what I'm saying? So you answered your own question. We evolved from animals. You know what I'm saying? But as soon as we got to a point where we could walk upright, so I guess what you're saying is other animals, other cultures outside the Western cultures have more than one woman. And so that's what I'm saying to you. Actually, if you do your study in ancient Kemetian history, you will see that not all African people believe in polygamy. So the bottom line is, my answer to your question is, it's an evolution, bro. You know, yeah, there are other mammals and other animals who have more than one mate. But as you evolve, my grandma used to tell me, once you know better, you do better. You know what I'm saying? So if man is the ultimate evolution of an animal, then as we evolve, we should be able to evolve, and our thinking and our ideals should be able to evolve as well. With that being said, I think that evolution comes with being able to commit and discipline yourself to be with one person. I mean, I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's my answer to what you brought up, though.
Lisa, what do you think about, I guess it may be a moot point for this particular show. I know we're going way off the reservation, but there are other cultures out there that believe in multi, even here in the United States. You know, you have the great state of Utah. We did a show of a young lady who was one of 26 kids because she lived in a polygamous society. Of course, now we're talking about our culture. Black folks don't really get down with that. So, again, this may be a good point. But do you run across that where men feel like they are of a sort of kingdom or mastery where they feel like they can't be just with one woman?
Mm-hmm. I have heard that philosophy before, where a man will say, well, if you look at the animals in the wild or other mammals, a lot of them have more than one, you know, mate. But there are other, I mean, you could just argue that and say there are other, a lot of animals who do have one mate for their entire lives. Or if you look at the life cycles, for instance, of maybe an elephant or something. But, I mean, it's just, you do hear it. I mean, you hear men say that we're not biologically built this way to be with one woman. I don't know. We didn't talk about that in our book.
Yeah, so why would you even entertain it? You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, I love you ladies because you all are very politically correct. And I love that. But it's garbage because nobody talks about how the female lion, when you look at the person that actually rules the kingdom, the female lion takes the dominant role in various parts of their life. But you don't see brothers using that. You know what I'm saying? As a way to justify, when you talk about certain spiders, you don't hear brothers using them because once the female, or the praying mantis, once the female finishes whatever she needs to do with that dude, oftentimes she kills and eats the male. But you never hear dudes, you know what I'm saying, wax philosophically about nature when it comes to that part of, I mean, bro, you know I'm a slight, you know I'm a closet nerd. So, you know, I use stuff like this, you know, to pontificate about how we do what we do. So, and here's my thing on this polygamy thing. If we are both made in God's image, man and woman, you know, and a lot of times people like to say the woman comes from the rib of the man. Ladies, I know you never heard a guy argue against this whole thing, but I'm one because I know how well I used it to manipulate women. You know what I'm saying? And I know, and Clark and I know the word because he knows the Bible back and forth. He taught me some things about the word. But here's my thing. We use certain things to our advantage, and sisters allow it to be used against them. Because here's my thing. If God created man and woman in God's image, but when you look at who has the inner workings to do godly things, know, out of the two of us, which one has the capacity to be able to bring in the seed, to incubate it, to nurture it, to hold it, to feed it, to once again nurture it, and then to be the vessel for that new creation to come into this realm of life. That's not a man. That's a woman. So out of the two genders, the woman is more godlike than men. But you don't see women, or you don't see different people saying, well, if it's okay for a man to have 20 wives, then it should be okay for a woman to have 20 husbands. People will hit the roof, bro. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So why shut down society with that one.
You shut down society. So if we were both created from God's image, okay, and if men have done this for years or in other cultures, then where is it, if it should be what's good for the goose should be good for the gander. So did God make man superior to woman? Because in the Bible it says a woman should submit to a man. See, that's the question for me. And those are the things that I talk about in my music. Those are the things that I talk about when I go and talk to people, because we have taken something and used it to our detriment. I mean, to our detriment. It's to our benefit, but it's also to our detriment, because we treat the history of women the same way as we treat the history of the black man. The true essence of black people has been wiped off the face of the earth, and you got to go search for the truth, just like you got to go search for the godliness of a woman and how it played out throughout the history of our being. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, and I definitely do. I want to ask this question for D. We're going to get you in here, D. This is coming from the chat room. Matthew
uh-huh.
Hamilton has this question. With all the stresses that come with black America, with being black in America, you know, with racism, poverty, et cetera, do you think black men and women value marriage, or is it kind of placed on the back burner? That's a question from Matthew Hamilton. And I know we might have touched a little bit on this earlier, but he wasn't on the show. So can we reiterate maybe the answers to that you found in your documentary book?
Yeah. I would definitely say it's placed on the back burner. And I think of it's just the culture that we have today. Just, you know, a lot of people think about self first and then family next. Where back in the day, you know, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, it was all about family. And career came second. So now there are so many people, you know, that think about career first. So I would probably say it's on the back burner. Then, you know, a lot of people go into it with the option of divorce. So that I would definitely say it's on the back burner.
But Lisa, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay, I'll say this. I think people put it on the back burner, but in our community, I still think it is important. But just to echo Dee's comment, yes, that's what we're told now. Because, for instance, a mother to a child, to a daughter now, she'll say, well, you know, there aren't any good black men out here, so you have to get your own. You're going to have to go to college and get your master's and move on and go to school, get your money right, buy your house, your car, because you're independent. You don't need a man, et cetera, et cetera, and this is where you are. So it's that mentality now. So you do see a lot of people getting married later in life. You see people having children later in life, but like Dee said, our grandparents, you know, they would get married at 19, 20, 21 and already start having children, and then they work together to build themselves up.
Exactly.
As far as their finances, but now it's different, and I do think it comes from that mentality where, you know, you're not going to find a good man, so you just got to get it on your own, and that sort of just flows over into our views on relationships, unfortunately.
Right. Mr. Arrington, do you think black men and women value marriage, or is it kind of placed on the black burner?
I think we value it, but I don't think we have the tools. I don't think we were given the tools to navigate through life's obstacles to make it to the end together. You know, just like the sister said. Mothers are raising their daughters to be very, very independent and to make their own money and to do certain things. And by no means am I saying that this is like the truth across the board, but I will say that in most instances that I've seen, those same mothers that teach their daughters to be superwomen, they teach their sons to be dependent upon them, and they don't show them how to multitask. And I'm only talking from experience. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking from experience from the years that I've learned some valuable things from women once I realized that I was a little twisted. I learned a lesson in 04, which is not that long ago. One of my exes told me, she said, "Babe, if you want to be an extraordinary man, you really need to learn how to multitask, because most men can't do more than one thing at a time very well, but women are raised to be multifaceted and multidimensional. We can juggle everything that we're juggling and still make you feel like a man. And men weren't programmed and weren't raised to do that. And once I learned how to do that, I became a much better man. I heard somebody say something, so I'll be quiet on that because I know that's a fact right there."
Ladies, I want to ask you this. With right now, man, the economy has really wrecked a lot of jobs out there. There are a lot of guys who were the breadwinners, and they've just been kind of taken out of the equation. I've seen this across the board in white America as well as black America. Obviously, everything is multiplied in our communities. But I don't know when you did your data for this book, but I would imagine it had to have been somewhere between 2008 and now. Did you find in your research that there's a lot more stress nowadays than it was maybe, say, 5-10 years ago with where black men feel they have to be in order to be presented to a black woman as being dateable or someone worth being married? Ladies?
Well, okay, so let me just make sure we understand the question. So did we find that it's have more pressure to be at a certain level before they approach a black woman?
I'm speaking on an economic level now.
Certain level financially.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, even men who were doing well, say, 5 years ago, they're doing shitty now compared to what they were. So it's been, in my little circle of influence, I see a lot more pressure than even was 5 years ago to kind of stand out. And, you know, guys don't have the $50,000 in their savings anymore because they've had to live off of that the past 3 years. And so many things economically have really hit the black community. So in your research, did you find a lot of that being some factors of where men stand today?
Again, I think their issue was just their issue was coming to a woman who was titled like Miss Independent. I got this, I have this, what can you bring to the table? Do you have a perfect credit score? You know, how much do you make? Instead of really trying to get to know them, that was a turnoff. I think, again, they don't have a problem or an issue with success. They are proud of our success. That is what we found, and that is what other studies are now finding also. So it's not an issue about being with a woman who is successful. They just have a hard time finding women who are okay if their man makes less than them, or who are okay with letting a man be the head of the household, even if he doesn't make as much money as them. If the woman is making $90,000 a year and the man is making $50,000 a year, is he going to have to hear that every day of his life when they're together?
As a woman, what do you feel? Do you feel in most circumstances that he will have to hear that every day, or is that a misnomer?
I hate to say this. This is personally, Dee may have a totally different viewpoint, but I do see women acting like this. I do not have that personality. It is more important for me to have a man who is supportive, who and if he doesn't make as much as me, okay, he can help me in other ways. That is okay. And like I said before, men just want you to leave your success at home. You don't have to hold it over their head because no one, that is really verbal abuse, and no one has to put up with that. A man should not have to listen to that every day of their lives or have to listen to a woman. Well, you know I make this much money, or he can't go to the store and buy something for himself because he doesn't make as much as she does. So I have seen that. I've seen it firsthand, and I think that is something that women in general, also black women, need to start holding themselves accountable for and start making that change. You have to look at that because this is real. They have some of these women have those attitudes. Let's just be honest. They do. Some of them do, not all of them. D and I don't, but some do.
Hey, Al, I got a question for you, man. It's coming from a man's point of view. You know how the economy has really raped and pillaged a lot of the jobs out there, and so a lot of these brothers are having to reinvent themselves. Which is not a problem. I mean, entrepreneurship is certainly, to me, where they should have been in the first place, most of them. But that also causes another problem, which is it's time to begin anew. And so when you start over, you aren't making $120,000. You're making $25,000, but you're working for yourself now. Do you feel this has set up our community, I'll call it that, for failure as well?
Well, I feel like when you look at it from a totally selfish individualistic standpoint, it may. But I offer the optimism. You know, I offer the optimism of it's actually a chance to rebuild a structure that was tainted from the very beginning. You know what I'm saying? So so during this time of regrowth, I'll use myself as an example. I mean, ever since we were in our 20s, you and I vowed that we would only work for somebody else when we had to, because we had enough sense to go out and get our own. As a result, there were some people on paper who their written resume looked better because society said by the time you get to be a certain age, you should have these tangible things. And then you found that those people who had those tangible things, by the time they were in their mid-30s or late 30s, they were going through midlife crisis because we were still on some entrepreneurial things and we were doing some other things. So to answer your question, I think it's a bit, where we are right now economically is a bad situation, but I also think it's a situation for opportunity and growth because I had, like you said, I had to reinvent myself. And one of the first things I tell a sister is My written resume is decent, you know what I'm saying? But if you look at my potential, not just potential, because that potential is a horrible thing for a black sister to judge, for a sister to judge a brother by, period, black or white. Potential is a horrible word if there is no practical application of a plan that goes along with that potential, because you could be waiting on potential for a long time. But because the economy is where it is and there's an opportunity for a new growth, and for brother to go in a different direction, then you have an opportunity to grow together. So it almost levels the playing field, takes you back to another place in time to say, like the sister said earlier, hey, my grandparents or whatever, they got married young, and they worked through their differences to get to where they wanted to go. I think this economic climate is a perfect time for us to just sit down, kind of like what we're doing now. That's why I really want you ladies to come back on, because I like some of the things that you said. And I think it's a perfect time for progressive-minded sisters, like some of the things that you all have said, progressive brothers who want to honor sisters and see the God in them to say, you know what, agriculture is hot right now. Anything on the Internet is hot right now. Blue-collar things such as HVAC is hot right now. Because people are either going to be hot or cold, and you're going to want to get services if the other one is in extreme. It's a good time for us to get together, put away the baggage of the past, and say, it's a new day, let's grow together. That's my answer.
Wow. Hey, in the chat room there, off the chain, Latonya is saying, in my opinion, emasculation is the demise of most relationships. These women can't shut up. Listen and be supportive. Why you know, obviously this is a hot button topic, And we're winding it down. Again, ladies, thank you so much for writing this book, Real Talk, and because I know you get this everywhere you go, where you start off saying a couple words, and the next thing you know, 8 hours later, you guys are still talking about topics and discussions, and I think that's well needed. So I'm so happy that someone decided to write a book like this. So I just want to say big up to you guys again.
Thank you so much. Thank you for helping us get the word out. Thank you for interviewing us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you got it. And Brother A. London, I know we're going to talk about some other things, man, but you know how we do. We go all over the world. I want to thank you for hanging out on the conversation again. I know you've been on the show before. We haven't featured you yet, so this is our first time featuring you. And I want to say, man, your music, it's timeless. You are what I like to say, a throwback from back in the day. You are our generation's, you know, Teddy Pendergrass and Marvin Gaye, brother, and just keep doing what you do. And don't quit, you know, keep putting it out there, bro. I know you want to go more into songwriting, man, but as indicative of that song, the interview, and all the other songs we listen to, bro, you got a gift, and it's your destiny to keep sharing that with the world until God says, come on home.
I appreciate it, bro.
Absolutely. So
I appreciate it.
Come on back. Well, we'll chat it up. You know, we'll talk before the end of the year. We'll come up with something just to chat it up because we could do that old school in the house. I want to thank everybody in the chat room for hanging out. Matthew Hamilton, Latonya Nelson, International Life, Vera, Words of a Feather, Richard Rowland, all the guests. Man, we had it. This show was off the chain, man. We had all kind of folks calling in. Alabama in the house, 205, Eric Clark. I mean, that's Alabama, ain't it?
Yeah, you know, man, you know, don't act, you know what it is. You know,
I know, right?
Yeah, you know, don't act like you don't know what that 205 and that 334 is, but come on now. Come on.
Hey, how's your brother doing, brother?
Oh, he's great, man. Look out for that. They're called the Bama Boys. They've done a lot with Beyonce, a lot with Solange. They're doing their thing as well. They're about to do some stuff with NASCAR. Hopefully I can get in with them on that because that's going to be a big deal for them. They did a commercial with Beyonce, with Vizio. So, I mean, he represents the family well. Hey, can I do a shameless plug, man? London Arrington, iTunes, AOL.com. You can also find me up under Mr. London. I'm doing kids music. My goal, I know I'm a little off the chain, but my goal is to be the new Mr. Rogers. The kids' CD is called Mr. London. I got a hip-hop version and a lullaby version of Victory Voice and Sing. I think the kids should know it. I know a lot of grown people who don't know it. Learn your history and be about the business of being kings and queens. That's it.
Hey, give us that website again, man, to pick up your music and to follow your journey. Once again, please.
You can go to cdbaby.com and look up London Arrington. You can go on iTunes and look up London Arrington or Mr. London. Mr. London, you're going to find a lot of kids' music because I'm writing children's music. My goal is to be like the new Mr. Rogers in my own way. And then iTunes, AOL, Amazon, you can find London Arrington and Mr. London. Hey, support independent artists and, you know, just love to learn each other. Learn to love each other, man. That's been a really big thing for me, learning how to love myself and preparing myself to have someone love me and I can love somebody and hopefully get married. So I definitely love some of the things the sisters were saying about the book. I know I may have shot myself in the foot about being a feature, man, but when I hear Real Talk, I just like to get in and just have a good time. But, man, thanks for having me. And maybe I can come on again and we can do it, you know, do it another time. But I love the things that Dee and Lisa, right? That's their names.
Dee and Lisa, yep.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely love what they were saying. So it moved me. I just wanted to just kind of converse with them a little bit more, man. But thank you for definitely having me. I appreciate you playing the music. You know what I'm saying? Interview is coming out on Live, Love, Life 365. That's the new label. And Wycliffe and I are going to do some stuff on my label. I'm going to do some stuff on his label. And maybe we can get you playing some keys, man, and doing something again. You know what I'm saying? People don't know. You know, you play Vaughn. You showed me how to play the piano. I mean, you know, you're a Renaissance man,
hey,
too. Maybe we can get you.
Hey, you can
have
me as one of your backup singers again. You know, I like to go for playing the silent backup singer. I can't take it.
Well, you clowning on air, man. I thought we said he was going to be professional, bro. Okay, look, that's it. I don't want to talk to you. We can never do right, man, on this show. You know what I'm saying? Never do right.
All right, I'm gonna play a little bit. Hey, I like that. The new Mr. Rogers, man, I like that. Hey, the only thing is you won't wear them tight sweaters. You wear some dicky jumpers, baby.
Oh, and wife beater, Brian Tim. I told you, ain't no shame to my game. The kids need that in the neighborhood.
Hey, we're going to have you back on before the end of the year, man. I like this kind of talk, this discussion. We might have some big raises having you on. So we're going to be booking a contract with your agent, too.
Let's work, man. Let's make it work.
That's what's up. Hey, Linda Nantes in the house, y'all. Hey, that's all we got for you, man. I hope you enjoyed the show. I did. Yeah, and we kept it half as civilized. Y'all just don't know. Woo, big shout out to all my folks listening. Man, the list, you know, my sis, my freshman sister, was hanging in there with me all the way down there in Miami. What's she doing in Miami? Really, honestly. Why is she in Miami? Luanda, come on back to Atlanta where you belong, sis. Again, everybody in the chat room, Real Talk, Michael McFadden was in the house. Yo, hey. I'm looking for my script now. Hey, thanks for all the folks. Big thanks to Literary Divas, D. Derek, and Lisa Matthews, Real Talk. Don't sleep on that book, seriously. And to my boy, A. London Arrington, always a pleasure. Shout out to the boss, the Mrs. Gary Garrison in the house. Yep. Yes, sir. Hey, check out the show this Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when our guests will be the brilliant authors, Miss Therese Hickman and Marissa Montalou, a.k.a. Pink, in the house. And remember, if you live life casually, you end up a casualty. That's all we got for you today. Shout out to everyone. I love you. Come on back, holler at your boy. Peace.